Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Hey, welcome back to part two of today's Saturday episode. Now, we've been playing some Banks Bracket Madness, but we also do a lot of other song segments as well, and this is also from 2019.
Adam Carolla Show 2546 featuring Gina Grad and Brian Bishop. This is early April of 2019. Adam and the gang are going over rambling songs, including Baby Don't Get Hooked on Me. It's hilarious. Check it out.
All right. So I was talking, I think it was on Friday's show, about In the Ghetto, the Elvis song. And then I had this weird thing. Obviously, we're talking about In the Grotto, but I've always thought about the song In the Ghetto because it's for Elvis, who did a lot of Tamawanahini means I love you in Hawaii. Like, he did a lot of that kind of stuff, you know?
Message songs.
Yeah, just stupid songs about parrots and surfing and stuff like that. And, you know, I guess the colonel kind of forced him into it or whatever. But In the Ghetto, it's like moving and it's bang on, as I said earlier. And
that's
also
what you'd expect from Elvis.
It's weird, too, because it was written by Mac Davis. And Mac Davis is the whitest dude on the planet. Mac Davis.
This is Mac Davis.
Singer, songwriter, actor, kind of Jerry Reed-esque from Smoking the Bandit. The guy drove the 18-wheeler was Jerry Reed.
Wow.
And it was like, oh, yeah, that guy, like, acted, and he also, but he wrote some songs, but he sung some songs. Like, and Mac Davis was in North Dallas 40. He was a lead, him and Nick Nolte. Oh. He played the quarterback in North Dallas 40. It was like, the lead was Nick Nolte, but it was also pretty much Mac Davis. And I can't remember if Mac Davis is still alive, but he was a pretty prolific songwriter. There's a few other guys that are that
alive, age 77.
That way, Mac was sort of a good old boy, and or he's played kind of a good old boy, and probably sung some country songs. And I don't know, he probably sung "I Don't Like Spiders and Snakes, But That Ain't What It Takes to Love Me." Is that Mac Davis?
Writing.
Dawson's looking. I don't like Spires and Sinks. Is that a Mac Davis song? He also had an element of, he wrote, had a kind of a novel side to him, too. I'm trying to think of, like, who to compare. You compare him to, God, what's his name? Good-looking guy, singer, songwriter, actor, but, you know, one of those, God, I'm trying to think of who I could compare him to. Not modern day, but back in the
Billy
day.
Billy Strange. A lot of people say Billy Strange when they search for him. I don't know if that
means that's what I'm thinking of.
His
but
most popular song on Spotify is "Baby Don't Get Hooked on Me."
Baby, baby, don't. Oh man, it's kind of rambling from a futon. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, listen, baby, like, I'm not going to get up and ramble, but after you're done blowing me, I need you to ramble.
Show yourself the door.
Yeah, you ramble.
Girl, you're getting that look.
You're hot. There's like your hot-blooded woman child or something.
To worry me.
Yeah, see, you're getting hooked on me. You know, that's like, we've all had those conversations.
I should have dedicated this to Christy when I had the chance.
But you shouldn't stop blowing me, which is really the undercurrent to every one of these songs.
That's the subtext.
Just keep it friendly, girl, because I don't want to leave.
I'm going to blow a load in your weave. Baby, baby, don't get hooked on me. Baby, baby, don't get hooked on me. I'll bang you on the futon and I'll set you free. Baby, baby, don't get hooked on me.
Powerful warning.
Fuck you, Bradley Cooper. It's not that hard.
Maybe it's time to let the shut up.
It's powerful.
I think he... Oh, this is a great, this is a great line. This is a great line. Here it comes.
Girl, you're a hot-blooded woman child.
Oh, no.
Oh, listen.
And it's warm where you're touching me.
Oh.
Between
radio
the taint
friendly?
And the sack.
Special spot.
But I can tell by your trembling smile.
Trembling?
That rape situation.
You're seeing way too much in me.
Yeah.
He's gaslighting.
I want you to look at either my navel or my sack.
Don't look at my eyes. Don't look at me.
Let your life get tangled up with mine. Cause I'll just leave you. I can't take no hanging vine.
No hanging vine.
Wow. Flattering.
Don't get hooked on me. Baby, baby, don't get hooked on me. I'll bang your younger sister, then I'll set you free. Baby, baby, don't get hooked on me. This could be my new karaoke song.
Yeah, strong.
Because I'll point. Yeah. I'll be pointing at everyone.
Interactive.
Not verbally, but you build on the message.
I'll point at the wives. I'll point at the single ladies. I'll find the one gay guy and give him a finger shout out to, you know. Sit you. And after I done, when I point at the chick, I sniff my finger. That's my move. Don't get hooked on me.
You point, you shake your head, they start to nod.
That's right.
Did that song chart?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it definitely charted.
Wow.
I wouldn't know all the... I don't have any Mac Davis albums. I've only heard that song on the radio. So wow. If I know all the words...
Sure.
And I own no Mac Davis albums, it must have played... It must have gotten some spins, because I've completely... I know every lyric to that song, and it's only been from the backseat of a car in the 70s.
Mm-hmm. His next biggest song, and after that, it's a big drop-off. It's Hard to Be Humble. Remember It's Hard to Be Humble?
No.
Well, I don't know either.
I don't. That one I don't know. Although I'd say that song could be called It's Hard to Be Humble.
Follow-up. It's the same character in the same universe.
I like this self-rambling theme, though. Like, normally the guy gets up, and he's hopping a train, and he's out of there. But this is one where you got to clear out.
Now here I am,
headliner
in one of the biggest nightclubs in the country, and I wake up at 8 o'clock in the morning in this star suite, all by myself.
That's what I said. I don't know this one. But he didn't sing Spiders and Snakes. That's somebody
that
else.
That was Jim Stafford.
Oh, Jim Stafford. Oh, Jim Stafford was, kind of a Mac Davis. Jim Stafford had his monkey, Wackadoo.
And Baby Don't Get Hooked on Me, number one in 72.
Wow.
Jesus. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's not fair.
Yeah. It was kind of weird hearing all those songs, because in 1972, that's about the time my parents were getting divorced. Mm-hmm. And my dad was at his in-law's house. My dad had nowhere to go because he had no money and he couldn't afford an apartment in North Hollywood. In 1972, which was like $89 a month, but he didn't have enough money for that. So he went and slept on the sofa in the one bedroom, one bathroom, 1200 square foot house that my mom's parents lived in.
Jesus. So, humbling. Confusing.
Humbling.
So he's sleeping in his father-in-law's, my grandfather, Lotzi, he's sleeping on the sofa in his den in a miniature house. And I'm hearing songs like this, and it's like, wow, I sure ain't living with that dude. That dude ain't Mac Davis, that's for goddamn sure. Although they both, in their prime, my dad and Mac Davis, had a hell of a Jew-fro.
Yeah, puffy.
Yeah, Mac had a little more of a perm, and my dad had a little more fro, but they still had a nice... thick mop up there.
Gene, isn't it refreshing to hear a guy say, don't get hooked on? I'm sure you've been hooked on a guy at one point in your life, an unhealthy relationship. Maybe it's nice to refreshing to hear the guy say, hey, babe, don't get hooked on. I know what you're thinking. I know where this is headed.
That is some gaslighting shit right there. This isn't what maybe I know you think you know what's happening, but that's not what's happening.
I can see it. I can see it looking at you. I can see
that trembling smile.
I don't know. Does anyone review the lyrics, though? Like, at some point, you're reading the top few stanzas, and you're like, oh, yeah, I get it. Yeah, yeah. Your hot-blooded woman child, and it's warmer, you're touching me. Like, do we need child? Yeah. Comes right? We go woman, and then we go child, and then we go warmer, you're touching me. Like, what if we just got rid of the child
part? You're a warm-blooded woman, babe.
Yeah.
Hey,
and it's warmer. Yeah. Like, do we need to work the child right off? Right, we have to bump against the rev limiter of touching me, so we have child and touching me just banging up against each other.
Was this sort of the heat in the center of the statutory rock, or was this before that?
This probably ushered
earnest.
It in.
Yeah, yeah.
This brought in this the statutory okay. rock. Yeah, like you're trembling and you're smiling.
He's guiding her to womanhood.
Jesus.
So the greatest gross. Line there is hanging vine.
Yeah. You don't need no hanging vine.
No hang yeah. vine.
Don't be around here hanging vine. Hit the brick, sister.
That's right. Yeah. Go find a trellis. What a full time job. All right. So,
you're in the ghetto.
You'll find some lattice work. But anyway, this guy.
For the vine to grow around?
Yeah. So I'm rambling.
Yeah.
This guy is. So Mac Davis, actor. I'm thinking, I don't know, maybe, I don't know if I'm thinking about Sam Elliott. I'm trying to think of the guy who wrote those. He wrote a bunch of hit songs, did a bunch of acting. He's a 70s, 80s guy, too.
Good looking. Chris Christopherson?
Yes. Yeah, Chris, yes, that's yes. who I'm thinking. Okay. That's what I'm thinking yeah. of. Yeah, that he's that. He's I don't know, a little bit of a novelty Chris Christopherson. But he wrote In the Ghetto,
yeah.
which is a crazy, great, poignant song.
He wrote a little less Conversation. The guy's got chops as a songwriter.
Oh, he wrote that one, too.
It says on Wikipedia.
Wow, why is that not his second? Well, he didn't sing.
No, yeah, there's only right. songs
Four
he
Elvis.
Sang. Yeah.
Boy, I got to tell you, you write basically two of my favorite Elvis songs, yeah. and they're both different sides of the spectrum over
the
here.
Entire different, yep.
Yeah, that's some pretty good work. And you star in a movie with Nick Nolte. And that was a big release, too, North Dallas 40. Like, it was wide. All right, so In the Ghettos, we were looking up in the lyrics, 1969. And then I was, like, thinking about it earlier, and I was like, it's the 50-year anniversary of In the Ghetto. And I started looking just for fun. And I'm always curious, like, what motivates me or anyone else, but, like, why things pop in my head. Like, oh, it's the 50th year. And then I'm like, yeah, but what month? Like, I mean, there's 12 months. Right. Like, we don't have to be. And I looked it up, and it's April 1969. And it's the middle. I think it's the 15th. So we're, you know, week away or whatever. But pretty damn close to 50 years spot on.
It's crazy.
And the lyrics as, well, we can play the song. Max, Pat, how are you doing on stats over there?
Good.
Okay.
On a cold and gray Chicago morning, a poor little baby child is born in the ghetto. And his mama cries. 'Cause if there's one thing she don't need, is another hungry mouth to feed in the ghetto. Now people, don't you understand? Child needs a helping hand. He'll grow to be an angry young man someday. Take a look at you and me. Are we too blind to see?
Hold on a second.
Do we simply turn?
Kanye West doesn't want to do things that I enjoy, right? Like, I feel like.
I think it's his main motivation.
If he could do this, he would do this, right?
Maybe.
Wouldn't everyone just do this if they could do this?
Some version of this.
Yeah. I don't think he can do this. He sings through a Roomba and points at the ceiling in a parka, but I don't think he chooses to do what he does. I think he's forced to by his lack of talent. Okay, here we go. Sorry.
The other way. Well, the world turns. And a hungry little boy with a runny nose plays in the street as a cold wind blows in the ghetto. And his hunger burns. So he starts to roam the streets at night, and he learns how to steal, and he learns how to fight in the ghetto. Then one night in desperation, the young man breaks away. He buys a gun, he steals a car, tries to run, but he don't get far, and his mama cries.
Timely.
Yeah, incredible. 50
As the
years.
As a crowd gathers round, an angry young man face down in the street with a gun in his hand in the ghetto. And as her young man dies,
On a cold and gray Chicago morning, another little baby child was born in the ghetto.
That's a pretty great song.
That's a great song. The best songs are the ones that start the cycle again. Yep. Like this kid now dies 18 years later, and as he's dying, yep, someone else is being born. I love that theme in a song.
Chicago must have a lot of egg on their face. Cabrini Green. I mean, because this song is about, it's Chicago. That's what
it says. You guys weren't born when this song. No one in this building but me was born when this song came out. I mean, it's crazy. But in the there's a couple things, Max Pat, I'm interested in. One is, I was likening it to a problem that we were focused on solving in a real world way, you know? And I was thinking about cars, as I always do, and we're talking about what, in 1969, miles per death in America, it was, you know, every 150,000 miles there was a fatality, and now it's every 2.7 million miles, or whatever it is. It's
severely
it's,
impacted.
Yeah, you know what else I was thinking about in 1969 as it pertains to automobiles is what was coming out of the exhaust pipe of a car in 1969.
Oh,
I mean, a lot of you guys are a little bit young, but if somebody fired up their car in the garage or whatever, you'd like, get it out. I can't see. You know,
die.
Like if you got behind a car going up a freeway on ramp and a guy stepped on it, it was a plume of smoke. I mean, you could literally fire up, and I'm not talking about, you know, a little four bang or whatever. I got a Jag with a V8 in it. You just fire it up in the garage and then with the door closed and like stand outside and talk outside the car and talk for 10 minutes. Like you don't even smell anything. Think what we did.
I was
with
gonna say,
that.
I haven't thought about this until just now. When I was a kid, every car stunk. Mm-hmm. I don't mean stink like, you know, foul odor. I mean, like it gave off like gross emissions.
Yeah.
Like you smelled cars coming down the street.
You heard them, you smelled them, your eyes watered, and
it's funny to think about that now.
No, it's like it doesn't. It's a non whatever. Like,
or if one car does do, there is one car like that. It's like a novelty. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, look at that old car. It stinks.
Yeah, I have 28 of them in the other warehouse. But yes, I know what you're saying.
Rich man, poor man.
Max Zapata, do you have that miles traveled stat from 69 to 2019, or it'll be 2017, or whatever the latest stat is on it?
I'm sorry, the miles.
All right. Remember, you don't know what we're talking about?
Well, I have a lot of stats. Which one did you want in particular?
The one when we were talking about this on Friday show, and I said, I wonder, we've made a huge impact on death per miles traveled from 1969 to now. And then we're going to figure that out. And
maybe the one said I don't have.
How about just some death stats? Just safety.
I would do the car. Max Bata, we set the table for this on Friday. We're going to compare how much ground, pardon the pun, we'd covered when we're focused on something in 50 years versus no focus on 50 years. All right, tell someone else to find that one. But you should have had that one because we already talked about it coming in. Now you're making a face. We talked about it on Friday's show. We talked about, didn't we have a...
We did. I don't remember if it was specifically miles traveled death, but it was certainly like, you know, fatalities.
Yes, it was. Well, the only way you measure highway fatalities is per miles traveled.
Sure.
That's the way they do it. Otherwise, it'd be, we have a bigger population or more people driving or whatever it is. But anyway, Max Pat will find
if that. If that's how they do it, then it's academic. All you have to do is find those stats and those will be the stats.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
All right. You want to find a clip of us talking about it on Friday for 5 minutes, or just to find the stats?
I'll look for
Tell someone to find the stats.
All right. Those are some rambling songs back in 2019. All right, we have one more clip for everybody. Let's go back to 2010 and listen to Adam talking to the late, great Rowdy Roddy Piper.
The episode we almost couldn't play. Adam Carolla Show 253, Rowdy Roddy Piper. This one's from February of 2010 due to a malformed MP3 export error from a former producer. There's certain episodes that even the official files have some errors. But I was able to recover this one and compress it, normalize it, level it, split it up into two parts. Now you can hear it like you never did before. Rowdy Roddy Piper in studio. Check it out.
Rowdy Roddy Piper in studio for what I believe is the first time, right?
Very first time.
Great to see you, my friend.
Thank you.
Last time I saw you, you were at Jimmy Kimmel's house choking out a friend of ours.
Thank you very much. One of the high points of my career. yeah, Mr. Weiner.
I will, yeah, one of our friends who we watched football with was, it was very surreal. John Popper from Blues Traveler was standing there, and Rowdy Roddy got him in a sleeper hold, and and asleep he went. Now, I will tell you the whole cool backstory to Rowdy Roddy and Cousin Sal, and Cousin Sal's 30th birthday, which was thrown at my Sherman Oaks house. And all that good shit. It's a great story. I'll tell you that in a second. First, a couple of quick plugs. Rowdy Roddy's going to be at the Improv. That is this Saturday at the Hollywood Improv. This Saturday, 11:30, late night show. Rowdy Roddy and his friends will all be there. So if you want to check out Roddy Piper's live show, you go to the Improv this Saturday night at 11:30. Also, speaking of the Improv, we're going to be down at the Ontario Improv tomorrow doing a live show. First show sold out. Still a couple of tickets for the second show. Jim Florentine's going to be on that one. And you can check that out. Also, at Irvine, first show sold out. But second show, still tickets open. That will be for the following Wednesday, after this coming Wednesday. And a quick note for our friends Seth MacFarlane over at the Family Guy. They're going to be at the Gibson Amphitheater this coming Friday for, well, they're doing a big benefit to support the hurricane, or I should say the Haiti earthquake relief effort. And they're going to do a table read of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia and the Family Guy and all the benefits. They'll do it live, and all the benefits are going to Haiti. So a good night and a good cause. And hell, I'd hit them all. I'd hit that one early. I'd hit Rowdy Roddy's later on. Wait, did I say theirs was Friday or Saturday? Oh, theirs is, what the hell? Is it Friday? Yeah. Okay, theirs is, yeah, theirs is Friday. So you hit ours on Wednesday in Ontario, then you hit theirs on Friday, and then you hit Rowdy's on Saturday. So the story goes, Cousin Sal, insane fan of Roddy Piper. Lots of pictures of him in a kilt going out to Madison Square Garden and watching you wrestle during your heyday. And really, his cousin Jimmy has just sort of made a, I don't know, the whole thing's just become this sort of wish fulfillment. It's kind of like make a wish for retarded adults, which, but that's what you should do with your
well, you know, I'd be the prize.
Yeah. Well, you and, no, but no. I mean, it's like growing up, Jimmy Kimmel loved Huey Lewis.
Yeah,
I loved Huey Newton, the leader of the Black Panthers, but he loved Huey Lewis. So he loved Huey Lewis, and Cousin Sal grew up loving you. So,
cool.
So later on, when Jimmy got a little bit of juice and he got his own show and he got a little money and so on and so forth, Jimmy said, Rowdy Piper will come to Cousin Sal's 30th birthday and I will go fly fishing with Huey Lewis in Colorado. And that's what he did. And a lot of guys just do coke when they get rich. And maybe he did coke with Huey Lewis. I don't know. But a lot of guys just go, you know, I'm going to buy my mom a Cadillac or I'm going to do blow. But these guys went, I want to hang out with the guys.
Pretty cool, isn't it? Pretty cool.
Cool for them. Cool for you. Nice to be on the radar that way.
Yeah, I was at home. I wasn't doing bar mitzvahs at that time. I was at home and got a phone call. And
now, where do you live?
I live on a mountain about 45 miles outside of Portland, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
I have my wife, my four kids, two grandchildren up there. And I got a phone call asking if I'd come to this guy's birthday party. And mm-hmm. I'd never heard of him.
Sure.
And, you know, I wasn't doing a whole lot of things back there as far as personal appearances. And they started telling me about this little kid that would wear a kilt and take the subway to Penn Station,
right,
and walk up. You know, and then those days, they hated me. And Madison Square Garden's just 24,000 Puerto Ricans with knives.
Sure.
And there's little Sal coming with the kilt on and walked up and in that crowd and cheering for me. He had a little noose and he put it around Hulk Hogan's doll. And by the time I was almost crying, by the time they finished the story, sure. And I got on an airplane and came to your house.
Yep.
Did about 10 minutes, got a beautiful bottle of scotch, and went home.
Yeah. Sal lit up like a Christmas tree. I mean, he had no idea.
What was he like after? I never found out.
He was giddy. It was like he'd lost his virginity. It's like you'd pulled up that kilt and did him from behind. He was on cloud 69. He really was. Like, he just couldn't. It was a sexual, emotional experience for him.
Okay, maybe I shouldn't have asked.
Maybe you're right. I went too far with my homoeroticism.
Yeah, it's okay.
But he really, Cousin Sal, you know, watching the surprised look on the kid's face is, you know, 30-year-old, by the way, kid. But just the idea that we knew how big a fan he was of yours, because we've seen pictures of him in his kilt, which God knows he probably made. And we also knew that you were going to arrive, and, sure, you know, you made a big entrance down the long driveway and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, he was just, he had no idea, obviously, what was coming. And he actually thought the Iron Sheik might be there. And no, we were just... We're just having some beers and partying in my backyard of the old party house I used to have in Sherman Oaks. And we probably got there an hour or so before you got there. And the party was in full effect by the time you showed up. And then here you came down the driveway. And I think you may have gotten him in a headlock or I don't know what.
It was awesome. It was very cool.
And you guys have been stayed in touch and been friends ever since. Jimmy Starr is grown brighter, and so is Cousin Sal's. Yeah. So good connection to have.
Good connection.
But let's talk about you, Roddy. How, you know, you see some guys, they go into pro wrestling because they blow out a knee playing college football or whatever it is. And, you know, there's some guy who's, you know, he's 6'5 and he's 265 and he's not going to make a living as an orthodontist. And he blew out his knee. He couldn't play. You know, he got cut by the Vikings, you know, from mini camp. So they do this thing where it's like, look, he can go to the back of the supermarket and stack pallets, or he can go into pro wrestling. But you don't strike me as that guy.
No, I'm not that guy. I started pro wrestling when I was 15.
15?
I'm still 15. I'm the youngest, I think the youngest pro fighter in history, period, to this day.
Uh-huh.
Because it's against the law now.
Right. And yeah, no one ever beat you.
And I got into it for the same reason. I needed money.
Right.
And I got
now
off.
Now, this is what year?
1969.
1969.
Yeah, Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And I was an amateur wrestler. I was a 167 amateur wrestling champion, the Golden Gloves champion. And I was living in this youth hostel. And it was the Police Athletic League. And my coach... amateur coach was also a professional referee when Vern Gagne used to come from Minneapolis. He'd come once every 3 weeks up to Winnipeg. So somebody just didn't show up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting in a lot of trouble in those days. And you had to be at the youth hostel at 9 p.m. to get in any later, and they'd lock the door. And I came this night, and I'm knocking on the door. You know, Father, he was a priest. Father, let me in, let me in, let me in. You know, and he comes in, and he says, this is what he says to me. He says, Roderick, he says, I know you're out there doing things. He says, I don't want to know what you're doing. He says, let me tell you what's going to happen to you. He says, you're going to go out there. You're going to get hungry. You're going to rob a 7-Eleven. You're going to run away. The police are going to catch you. They're going to throw you in jail. They're going to rape you and kill you.
Says, wow.
Just what he said to me.
Amen.
Thank you, Father. You know, so he says, what do you know about professional wrestling?
Uh-huh.
I don't know nothing about
it. The father asked you.
Yeah, father asked me... what do I know about
professionals? I, by the way, tell the exact same story to my 3.5-year-old son, except for the only difference between me and Flanagan's story is I say they're going to kill you, then rape you. I do a little bit. It's a little
scarier.
Twist. It's actually scarier in its own way.
In its own way.
In its own way.
There's a stretch,
but,
you know.
But it's almost the same story. So,
no, brutal guys there.
So they say, so he says, what do you know
about
they're gonna, wrestling?
Yeah, rape and kill, my particular case. Mm-hmm. And I says, I don't know nothing. He says, I can get you $25 if you fight this guy in the Winnipeg Arena. Somebody got hurt, just didn't show up. I don't know who that was. And I came fifth in the world playing the bagpipes. So the pipe band I was playing with,
Hold on. Let me just review here. An amateur wrestler. Yeah. I mean, like collegiate style yeah. wrestling. Golden Gloves boxer champion. Mm-hmm. And fifth in bagpipes. Yeah. Fifth in Canadian bagpipe rankings? Or
No. It was the first time all the bands came from the old country. I played with a band called Cabre Fay, City of Toronto. Mm-hmm. And they came, first time had the world championships outside Scotland in the C&E Gardens in Toronto, Canada. Uh-huh. And I was part of that, and the band came in fifth.
Wow.
Yeah, so and that's why when I first came to the ring, my pipe band said, we'll play you to the ring.
Uh-huh.
And my Christian name is Roderick George Toombs.
Mm-hmm.
But when I came to the ring, the announcer didn't know who I was. And so I had four bagpipers, a bass drummer, and two uh-huh. snares uh-huh. playing a 167-pound kid to the ring.
Right.
And the announcer didn't know who I was, nor didn't care, really. Just short for Roderick as Roddy. And he said, right. ladies and gentlemen, here comes Roddy the Piper.
Ah.
And that's how I got the name. And the just got dropped.
Right.
Shortest match in the history of the Winnipeg Arena. 10 seconds it lasted. I went against a guy, 320 pounds, Larry the Axe Henning.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I started. Busted my eye open.
Didn't you guys work it out a little bit? Like, you didn't meet him, you didn't know what was going on?
Exactly what happened. I came in the locker room, the promoter looked at me and said, just be like a Greyhound bus and leave the driving to us.
Really?
That was it.
And the guy just picked you up, threw you around like a rag doll?
Yeah, I was just some kid, and he didn't. Whoever he was supposed to go against,
right?
Was some formidable opponent. There's Larry. Ah!
Wow, you're looking
That's
at him.
That's him right there.
On
good
the left.
Lord, your crew is good. Donnie.
Yeah, nice
good job.
Now,
that's well, him right
what's
there.
What's his name?
Larry the Axe Henny. Have you ever heard of a wrestler named Mr. Perfect?
Sure.
Passed away. That's his daddy.
Oh, really? It's Mr. Yeah. Perfect's dad.
And holy cow. He still scares me. Nordic Viking. Right
yeah, he's
there.
A,
look at that beard.
He's a big man.
He's a big man. 320 pounds.
And so he basically busted you up and threw you around. He didn't take it easy on you.
No, 10 seconds.
10 seconds.
You know, you got to figure in pro wrestling, there's a 3 count for your shoulders. That leaves 7 of action.
Right.
Wasn't a big night for Rod.
Well, why isn't he supposed to milk it a little bit?
No, those are different back there. This guy looked at it. He's, he's one of the best in the world at the time.
And he was probably just pissed that they threw this kid in.
Yeah, it was just meat.
Right.
Just threw meat at him. And just
so 167 pounds, but you're bit by the bug? And,
no.
and by the way, what happened? What happened? First off, what gets you into the youth hostel and Father Flanagan and all that business? I mean, broken home, alcohol, what's going on? And is that where you're from? You're Canadian.
I was born in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan.
And you're getting in and out of trouble. You're out on the streets, and you're essentially out on your own at 14, 15 years of age?
13. Yeah.
And just broken family, the basic stuff?
No, not quite. My father was a RCMP, Royal Canadian Mounted Policeman, and a Canadian National Railway Policeman. And they would move them every year, every 365 days on the day, because they didn't want them to get familiar with the people. I lived on an Indian reservation.
Uh-huh. They didn't want them to buddy up with the people?
Exactly.
So they keep them sort of rotating so they couldn't get in with the local whoever's, and next thing you know, they're on the grift with these guys.
Exactly.
They're getting paid off.
It was tough times back
Interesting.
Then. You know, they, in the Royal Canadian Mounted Police is a very Victorian-run police department.
He had the whole Mountie uniform?
The whole nine yards.
Did he have a horse?
No, he didn't have a horse.
I watched too much.
I'm sure he could have rode
right. So they're rotating these guys.
Yeah. And they put my father, like one of the places was a place called The Paw, T-H-E-P-A-S. Mm-hmm. And it's an Indian reservation. Still to this day, one of the toughest Indian reservations in Canada. And he'd be the only cop for like 250 miles.
Right.
And he had to patrol that whole area. So it was, I was the only white kid on that investigation.
Oh, yeah.
So it got a little tasty, you know.
Yeah, and they're probably not fans of the pale face anyway over there. I don't know how you Canadians handle your Indians, but we don't have a great track record with our Indians.
We're in the buddy system.
Yeah, well, we just got them drunk enough and got them enough casinos to leave us alone, essentially. But I couldn't imagine being the only blue-eyed devil rolling around that huge Indian nation.
I'll tell you a story. This Indian reservation. I'm 6 years old, and it was like 100 below in the wintertime with the wind chill. It's unbelievably cold.
It's an insane place to raise a family.
Absolutely. So in the springtime, there would be so much snow that melted. There would be huge puddles. And there's logs. It's a lumber mill. And I used to roll on these logs, and I fell in a couple times with my big parka on. So, you know, when I got home, I got a lot of trouble.
Sure.
So I came back with Arlene Philly, my girlfriend at the time. Mm-hmm. We're in grade one together. And we're paddling on the logs, and we both fall in. I'm too scared to go home. So Arlene says, she lived right across the highway, come across the highway. We went into her garage, and we took all our clothes off to hang them up to dry them out. And just as we got there with no clothes on at all, the clothes up in the dryer, or the hanger, her mom came in to the garage and yelled rape.
Oh, really?
And she called the police.
And your dad was the...
My dad was a cop.
Oh, no.
It's a day in the life of Rod. There's the Mounties.
Wow.
Good Lord. Yeah.
So, wow.
Yeah. So, how do you explain that?
Yeah, it's tough.
Well, I didn't even know what rape was.
I like the log rolling part, though.
Well, thank you.
I mean, listen, that was way before Nintendo, kids. You had to go out and roll some logs.
You betcha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had to roll bums to make our own fun out here in North Hollywood. I couldn't imagine how cold it would be falling into that puddle.
Oh, serious cold.
So now, so what happens is your dad's, he's moving on, and you don't want to move on.
I don't want to go any more places like that.
Right. So you stay behind.
I just leave one time. Mm-hmm. A couple times, actually.
Right.
And I got brought back, and then just nobody came.
And so you're going to school.
Yes.
You're involved with sports, boxing, and wrestling, and
I was
all
involved
that.
With sports through the Police Athletic League and the YMCAs. YMCAs were great back then.
And so they now you get your pro wrestling debut. You make $25. You get Canadian. Busted up. You're still 167 pounds. You're still 15 years of age. Then what?
Right after that fight, the promoter comes back, and my eyes split open. My nose is broke. And he says to me, kid, you did great. How'd you like to go to Kansas City? Uh-huh. They put me in a van and smuggled me over the border. And for the next 4 years, I wrestled every day of my life all over the place in America until I got right here in the Olympic Auditorium.
Uh-huh. In Los Angeles.
Yeah. And then they got me a green card and a Social Security number so I could pay taxes. I'm still thanking them for that.
So you just would you stay at motels?
Yeah, whatever motel. You know, back in those days, America, like there was territories. For instance, Oregon, Washington was a territory. Frisco was a territory. Los Angeles was a territory. Texas, KC, Minneapolis. You know, go all across the nation. And by that time, from the Gorgeous George era, you know, it was quite a structured program they had going. And, you know, you stayed at the seediest motels that could give you the best rate. You did things like heal a room, and you did whatever you could do to get
by. How do you heal a room?
You you go to the front desk, and you say, I want to get a room. I'm by myself, and then I'll sneak you in the back door and somebody else, and then we'd split the bill.
Right, right.
To keep the expenses down.
And how much are you getting paid a gig at this point?
Oh, it varied $15, $20.
Really?
You know, yeah. There was one promoter, Elton Owens, and when you first came in, he'd pay in quarters, and he's paying you, and the old-timers finally got on your case. If you smiled, he'd stop paying you.
Right.
So he'd watch you, and he'd like $1, $2, $3. If he saw you smile, he'd stop paying you.
Quarters.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And so how does this then lead? Now, then you finally get out here. And you're fighting in the Olympic Auditorium. And now we're talking about the early 70s here, mid-early 70s. Wrestling, in my recollection, wrestling has this sort of ebb and flow, like, you know, big in the 60s, I guess, 50s and 60s.
Late 50s. 60s.
And then starts to wane into the later part of the 70s and has this sort of resurrection in the early 80s, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then
very good.
It sort of keeps going. But it's weird. It's a weird sport. Like, I guess baseball did that a little bit, and other sports do that a little bit. Like, the NFL hasn't really done that. You know, the NFL's been a slow and steady climb just pretty much from the 40s on, you know. Wrestling have these wildly popular periods and then just sort of be dormant for a few years.
Yeah, you know, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. So I'm saying, is this a part... Is this a point when things are wildly popular at this point in the early 70s?
Yeah, it's really interesting. My business started in the carnivals in about 1720. And I'll tell you someday how it started if you're ever interested in it.
And, you mean pro wrestling?
Pro wrestling, yeah. And the era you're talking about, you can go down to UCLA Melnick Hall and watch a lot of tapes on this. It's the Gorgeous George era. And it's the first time wrestling was one of the biggest programs that was right across America. Mm-hmm. Gorgeous George, Baron Leone, Chick Garibaldi. And it was huge. And then these guys started to do business, and they got exposed and for doing business, taking dives. And it crashed. Well, the guys...
It crashed when they found out...
That some guys were... Yeah, taking dives, and they were, you know, extending time limits and stuff.
Right.
Because people were betting on it back in the days.
Oh, they were?
Oh, yeah, man. Mm-hmm. And unbelievably great wrestlers. Terrifying guys. Well, once that crashed... What went through the 60s was a whole bunch of the roughest guys you ever seen that kept the business together. But that's when it broke into these small territories. I broke in. I love Donnie. Very cool.
Donnie's putting up pictures.
Yeah. I fought them. That's Gorgeous George right there. And he committed suicide.
When did he commit suicide?
He dyed all his turkey. He got a turkey ranch. And dyed all the turkeys purple. All the turkeys died. Anyway, I'm going to finish one story at a time. So... Once the crash from the mid-50s, Gorgeous George era, then all those old-timers, when I broke in, they were just at the end of their rope. Mm-hmm. So they, unbelievably mean guys. Mm-hmm. Mind me tell you a wrestling story of Justice in a second.
Sure.
And then about 78, I was coming into my own about 75.
Mm-hmm.
About 78, there was a guy named Ric Flair on the East Coast.
Sure.
And it started swelling again. Mm-hmm. And then all over the world, it started to get another roll. And then in 85, what they now know as WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. So now it's on another flow that's been taken corporately.
Right, right. And, all right, well, tell me a story about the Justice.
Justice system. Back in the day, those territories I told you about. In those days, because it was just after the Second World War, they'd have a resident Japanese fella who blew salt. They'd have a resident Afro-American gentleman that would headbutt. He'll come to me. I loved him. Bobo Brazil.
Uh-huh.
You know, great guy. And, you know, you didn't cross those territories. You didn't cross those lines. There was a guy named Tanaka who did a movie with a James Bond movie and went his odd job where he threw the hat.
Threw the hat at the killer.
So, that's it.
Hat, right.
So Tanaka comes into the same territory as Fuji. Fuji was one of my mentors. So now there's two Japanese people in that territory. Tanaka goes behind Fuji's back to the promoter, Roy Shires, and says, listen, I'm just hot off this movie. You know, get rid of Fuji. You need me.
Right.
Fuji found out. Nobody knows nothing. Fuji sees Tanaka. He says, hey, brother. Fuji, Tokyo via Hawaii. Hey, brother. He says, come on over Saturday. We're not doing anything. Bring the family. You know, I cook. You know, we have a good time. We watch football and da-da. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Tanaka comes over, brings his family. There he is.
Yeah.
Holy cow, Donnie. Yeah. And Tanaka and I are banging a garbage can with nunchucks at that time. Comes over with Fuji, and Fuji got a little bit of an upset stomach. He says, I'm sorry, but I don't feel so good. Please eat. And he make beautiful spaghetti, wine, meat sauce. Lovely meal. Everybody eats. Tanaka's family eat. And then Fuji has a silver platter with a silver dome over it. And he thought, just a second, but I says, I got a special surprise. He brings a silver platter, puts it down, takes the dome off. It's the head of Tanaka's dog. They just ate their dog. He says, now, brother, you need to leave. He left.
Their dog.
Tanaka ate his own dog.
Oh, Tanaka ate his own?
That was the meat sauce.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you eat any of it?
No.
Oh, my.
Wrestling Justice.
Wow. Wow.
Tough bunch of brutes there.
Yeah. Boy, those Jews. I wasn't listening really well, but you did say there are a couple of Jewish fellas. Wow. You do have to leave when your dog's hand is on
the
platter.
They're serious about what they're doing.
So they had territories, and they had a black guy in this territory, and they had an Asian guy in this territory, and they don't need two Asian guys in the same territory.
Not in them days, no.
Right.
Today's episode is brought to you by Geico, because Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? And we all know the answer. Of course you would. After all, who doesn't love a great deal, right? And when it comes to great rates on insurance for all the things in your life, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with the homeowner's, condo, or renter's coverage. You could save even more with a special discount when you bundle your coverages. Plus, add the easy-to-use Geico mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more. And choosing to switch to Geico becomes an easy choice. In fact, how easy is it, Gio?
Well, Chris, it's Geico easy.
It certainly is. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote or contact your local agent and get started seeing how much you could save. And that was the late, great Rowdy Roddy Piper in studio back in 2010. Thanks to Gio for G-mastering that.
I love you say that. Part two coming up tomorrow on the Corolla Classics feed if you can't get enough.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's something to look forward to tomorrow. And Gio and I, we'll see you there. My name's Chris Loxamana. That's Superfan Giovanni.
And get it on.